From Topps comes the all-new digital card collecting app, free to download from iTunes or Google Play, Star Wars Card Trader.
For the first time ever, collect and trade everything from legendary 1977 Star Wars cards to new cards featuring exclusive content from Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens.
All from the comfort of your mobile devices, Star Wars Card Trader.
These are the cards you're looking for.
This is Master Obi-Wan Kenobi. I regret to report that both our Jedi Order and the Republic have fallen. Our future is uncertain. But in time, a new hope will emerge.
Coffee with Kenobi presents Rebels Reactions with Dan Z and Corey Club.
All troopers, focus your fire on... on the Jedi.
Us. Learn what it truly means to be a Jedi.
I'm in space! And I'm about to die!
We need an opening.
Found one!
What did he say?
He said hello, hyperspace.
Oh, and guess what? This is the podcast you're looking for.
Welcome to Rebels and Reactions, where Coffee with Kenobi examines Star Wars Rebels through a critical lens. On today's show, we will be discussing Brothers of the Broken Horn, Episode 6 of Season 2. Joining me today are two members of the Coffee with Kenobi blogger family, Joe Taylor and Father James Worthington. Joe and James are huge Star Wars fans, whose blogs always offer compelling new ways to look at Star Wars. Welcome, Joe and James.
Good evening.
Good to be here.
Yes, thank you. Thank you so much. Well, Joe, this is Joe's second time on Coffee with Kenobi. He was on Rebels Reactions last year for Breaking Ranks in Season 1. But this is James's very first time to be on Coffee with Kenobi. So we are delighted to have you, my friend.
Quite exciting. It's my first podcast ever, so.
Oh, even better, even better. And one of the things that we've loved
They're
so much.
Fun.
Oh, they are fun. It's fun for me because being able to have you guys a part of our wonderful Coffee with Kenobi family. I'm so blessed to be a part of. I feel like I've made new friends through this process. And while I've never gotten the chance to meet Joe or James face-to-face, I certainly look forward to that happening someday, very soon in the near future.
Yep.
So guys, we're going to start off with our overall opinions of Brothers of the Broken Horn. James, let's start with you.
All right, so I had to watch it three or four times, thinking about what are the overarching stories? What did I want to, try to come up with something intelligent to say. And it wasn't until my third watching I realized this isn't like an old X-Files Monsters of the Week story. I wasn't sure how it was going to fit into the overall story of the whole Rebel saga, how it fits into the whole Star Wars story. But finally watching Ezra in the beginning shooting at that stormtrooper helm with Chopper trying to keep his head down, and then with some of the things that Hondo said later on, I really saw how it was going to help with Ezra's journey, and I think that's how it sat for me. So when I made that breakthrough, I thought it was really excellent, propelling the character development, which is very good in this series.
Absolutely, absolutely. Joe, what about you?
I'm kind of like James. wasn't quite sure where it was going to fit in, but it definitely fit in rather nicely.
Yes, it did. It was a nice little break. I mean, the last episode always too there was pretty heavy with the two Inquisitors being there so prominently featured as the heels, as Freddie Prinze Jr. calls it, to borrow a professional wrestling term. So now we get a bit of a lighter-hearted episode, more focused on Ezra and the return of a beloved character, which we'll talk about very, very soon. And we open this episode on the planet Garel, which was last seen in Droids in Distress, and there's blaster training that James mentioned earlier. And there's an interesting debate that's going on between Rex and Kanan, and they say, are you a soldier or are you a Jedi? Ezra says he doesn't want to be either. Joe, what is he? And can you be both of those things?
Well, we saw from the Clone Wars that you could be both of them. just depends on how it affects you personally. I don't think he's either a soldier or a Jedi yet. Still training.
It's difficult. James, what about you?
I have three kids myself, so they're about the same age as Ezra. And you're only seeing in Clone Wars and here in Rebels kids his age being put on a stage that, you know, we as adult men probably wouldn't be too excited to be in some of those situations. I was never a soldier, not something that I would look forward to personally, you know. So here he is, 15 years old. Is he 15, maybe 16 yet? Whatever. And having to answer those sorts of questions. When I was 15, I was trying to decide if I wanted to go to class or not, much less what I wanted to be when I grew up. And then you put that together with the idea that, and this is some of the opinions that come out in some of the things I write and a lot of the things I like to read, what had happened to the Jedi by the end of the Old Republic? And here he is answering that same question. You know, like Joe said, this Jedi became both, and neither of them seems particularly exciting. And that's his, well, it's an existential crisis. I'm no philosopher. Don't call me on that word. I guess that's the right way to call it. So.
No, I think you're right on with that. And based on what you write for Coffee with Kenobi and in other places, you definitely are a philosopher because you've got a unique way to look at things, as does Joe. And what's strong to me about this, and I think it's typified, in full disclosure, Jay Krebs is going to join us as well, one of our other Coffee with Kenobi bloggers. Didn't work out with her schedule, but she did have something great she was going to talk about, and that was the classic Eric Erickson crisis of identity versus role confusion, which is prevalent in teenagers anyway. And I think we see a bit of a microscopic view of that earlier on, because as we know from episode one, you know, Jedi can protect, but they can't fight a war. So he says we're not soldiers, but yet they perform as soldiers, like Joe mentioned. So it's sort of a paradoxical thing that a lot of the Jedi struggle with throughout the Clone Wars, which led one of the things that led to their undoing. But Ezra walks that line so beautifully, probably better than maybe any Jedi until Luke Skywalker comes into the picture. So it's interesting that they have these debates, and Ezra just doesn't want anything to do with it. He wants to get out of the picture. He needs a bit of a break. And I was actually talking about this with some other listeners, and they had mentioned to me, well, I don't know if it's believable that Ezra would just run off like that, but Ezra's a teenager, and he's got a driver's license. So the Phantom is calling. He jumps in it. He's supposed to clean the ion scoring, and he seems visibly annoyed. I almost wonder if that even really needed to be done or if Hera was just trying to get him away because she could sense his inner angst. But he mentions missing the old days, running off to answer a distress call from Zago. James, you have children of your own. Does this seem believable, what Ezra does? Is this something that seems plausible to you?
Oh, absolutely. I'll tell you a funny story about my I'm going to have her listen to it eventually, but about my daughter. She was there. She remembers the story. On her 13th birthday, she came down the stairs. We had breakfast together. It was really nice. All five of us were there. At the end of it, she announced that she hated us, ran up to her room, shut the door, and turned on One Direction really, really loud. You know, she's trying to figure out who she is. And, you know, so there's Ezra in that same sort of situation. And then getting busy work. I think.
That's right.
But again, it might have been the right thing for him to do at that time. And I think the human person, you know, in a weak moment, in an unexamined moment, is always looking for something nostalgic to feed their mind or to think back to when things were better. There were always good old days way back when. Whatever happened before sometimes is better than it is now, even if things are going quite okay. So Ezra says, you know, I want to go back and run the streets, be a low threat again, except that he gets back there. And I guess we'll see this later on in the story. Of course, you find out the good old days weren't always the good old days.
Exactly. I like how you phrase that. He's kind of getting back to basics, but there's still that call to responsibility. Joe, what about you? How did this scene grab you? Do you think Ezra will run off like that?
I think so. Like James said, he's a teenager. So I'm sure I did that once or twice when I was younger.
Yes, that's what the word on the street was about you before you joined the CWK family. A bit of a wild one. And as a parent and a teacher myself, I do find this really believable because he doesn't do it in a disrespectful way. He needs to get away. He needs to clear his head. And the way he does that is to get to the roots of what he is. And it's not like he's going off into uncharted territory, because he's familiar with outer space because he's been with the crew of the Ghost for a while. And he answers a distress call from Vizago, who we remember very well from season one of The Broken Horn. And when we last saw Vizago, there was a lot of concern, because in a very Godfather-esque callback, he made a deal with Vizago to help get information, which led to them rescuing Kanan. It was very important. It had to be done, apparently, and Kanan was saved. But he owed Vizago, so he was eager to pay this off. And I think it comes at a bit easier than maybe initially expected at the end of season one, which we'll talk about. But I want to focus a little bit on Ezra and Chopper's banter on the way to the Broken Horn. I felt a lot of similarities to Luke Skywalker flying to Dagobah and his conversations with R2. And there's no one I know who loves R2-D2 more than Joe Taylor. Joe, did you catch those little callbacks?
Ezra kind of reminded me a lot of Luke during Empire in this episode.
I agree. And what similarities do you see between Luke and Ezra, particularly in this scene?
Kind of not wanting to train hard, kind of running off, not fully trained like Luke did to go save his friends. Ezra's basically doing that for a friend of a friend.
Absolutely. James, what about you?
Yeah, that's quite the interesting connection. Or, although to call Vizago a friend, you know, there was more of a relationship of, boy, that was when they were letting everybody in on the secret, right? No, he's a Jedi, he said back then. And you saw Vizago's eyes open up. Oh, really? Here's information that can be very useful, you know? But so Ezra in himself at that moment, that's the connection to Luke. He had a severe lack of focus. But it wasn't that he wasn't looking for where he wanted to go with his life, with his training, with whatever it is he wanted to call himself. What's that word I'm going to call myself by? Luke was going to be a friend. And Jedi maybe somewhere further down the road. It's kind of like, when as we're growing up, we want to get a job, but not yet.
Right.
Let me lay on the couch and eat some ice cream out of the carton for a little while longer.
Well, and even really, you could easily ask that same question, but look at R2 and Chopper and what is similar to them in that scene. I think it's kind of neat, the dynamic between the two. I think that Ezra and Chopper treat each other more like equals, as Luke does with R2. Clearly, Luke is in charge, but R2 has this amazing respect for him. Chopper has respect, but he obviously channels it in much different ways. But the camaraderie between the two, I think, is really beautiful here, especially as they're going along. And they first get on the Broken Horn. Right away, we see this ominous threat of droids. Two shows in a row where we see little elements, little gleams of gothic literature with the darkness and the scariness, but it kind of stops there. These droids are deactivated, these early concepts of IG-88 models, essentially. And Ezra meets Hondo Anaka. And ironically, Ezra says his name is Lando Calrissian. Before we look into Hondo, let's talk about the motif here of children and dishonesty to try to further your individual goals. James, what do you think about that?
There is a history of deception from all sorts of literature. Helena Troy, some of the spies in the Old Testament, not being deceitful for deceit's own sake, but to actually achieve a goal. Whether that's admirable or not, I don't know. And just Ezra wants to be admirable, but sometimes you find yourself in those situations where you have to protect yourself in some other some way through a little bit of subterfuge. And there he was, just protecting himself. Here's this guy hopping out from underneath a broken computer panel. And, you know, if he tells him who he is, he knows that dropping the name Bridger sometimes gets recognized. You know, I'm a junior as well. You know, I'm James Jr. And I lived in the same neighborhood as my dad. So I would go somewhere and they'd go, oh, yeah, you must be just like your pop. Well, sometimes not. So he's protecting himself. I think one of the interesting things I noticed about Ezra this week is how sure he was of himself. Yeah. He would make a decision, or when, you know, I guess we'll get into it later, or maybe not, I don't know. When they're bargaining over the crates, he's sure. He's not hemming and hawing and trying his best. He's really wrangling with this guy who's been a professional pirate for many, many years. So he knew enough to protect himself. It wasn't just a lie out of fear.
Right. Joe, what about you? What about this notion of lying? Is it a lie? I mean, obviously, technically it's a lie, but I, as James said, it's what is the intent?
I agree with James. I think he was just trying to protect himself, not give away too much.
Very much so, and he has a It's almost like saying Obi-Wan Kenobi is not honest because he doesn't tell Luke the truth right away. I don't think that's it. I think in the commandments it says, "Thou shalt not lie." I think this is a survival technique. Ezra doesn't know Hondo. He doesn't know what Hondo was like. But Ezra knows the Force, and he trusts his instincts. And as you mentioned, James, he's very sure of himself. And not in a cocky way, he's just very confident. And confidence, I try to explain this to my students all the time, confidence and cockiness are extremely different things. Yep. When you're confident, you believe in yourself. When you're cocky, you think you're better than everyone else. Ezra doesn't think he's better than anyone else. He's just using the tools he's been given to survive. And it ends up working out, obviously, very well. And Hondo's a character. Hondo's a fan favorite from the Clone Wars. I've always been a fan of Hondo.
Not me.
Really? Well, he is a different person now, Joe. How has he changed? You say that you're not a fan. I'm happy to hear you say that. Tell me why you're not. And do you think he's changed at all through this series?
Well, it seems like he's definitely changed from Clone Wars.
Yeah, you mentioned, though, that you don't like him. Tell me why not.
I didn't really like him in the Clone Wars. Maybe just the character arc. I don't know exactly why.
But, yeah, I kind of know what you're saying, though, because at first I wasn't sure about him, and they didn't seem to mind putting kids in peril. But then he ended up softening a little bit. He's always been an interesting character to me. I love the voice work that Jim Cummings does on him because he's so dynamic and he's charismatic in his duplicitous nature. But he's an interesting character. I think he's definitely changed. I think age has softened him a little bit. But at his core, he's still very Hondo, isn't he, James?
Oh, absolutely. You know, yep. We have to give Hondo his due. He's got a morality that is firm. He knows what he believes, but it's different from the one we're asked to have when we're sympathetic with the crew of the Ghost. You know, there's that pirate code. We all learned it from Johnny Depp a few years ago.
That's right.
But, you know, even in The Godfather, right? Most of us aren't playing the Godfather game, but those who are in that life following by a set of rules, you know?
Yep.
You know, this guy's my kind of scum, or you wound me, and I like it. You know, that kind of thing, you know? Just the way Hondo uses words, the only way I can describe it is they're delicious. He's tasting everything as it's coming out of his mouth, just like with Lando. And Ezra picking that name, it was the most random name he could think of, and so unfortunate that it was people that knew who that was. Hondo's way of living is different, and you know, that's a challenge to us as viewers, but he's consistent. Maybe he's grown up a little bit or whatever. However long it takes for him to grow those face horns out to the length they've become.
Yes.
You know, he's older, but they say old quarterbacks in the NFL say that they become better when they get older because the game slows down just a little bit and you can see the whole field without feeling rushed.
Right.
So that's kind of, he can play the field, you know.
I love that metaphor. That's so well said. And Hondo is experienced. And I think, you know, he's not as powerful as he used to be. It seems pretty clear that the Empire has taken away some of his abilities to trade and to do things that he does. He's still a force to be reckoned with, but he's different. I'm not going to say that he's been neutered, but his power has definitely decreased a little bit. But his humor has not. I mean, there's so many throwaway lines here. Like you said, his words are delicious. The stories I could tell, so many of them true. And then my favorite one later when he's talking to As Morgan, let's leave your wife out of this. I mean, they're sharp, they're quick, they're poignant, and they're hilarious. He's just a funny, fun character. Hey, it's Dan Z.
And Corey Club.
From Coffee with Kenobi. And we are excited to let you know about the Star Wars Card Trader app from Topps.
Yeah, Dan, you remember those cards that came out in 1977, the good old days? Well, they're back again. Yeah, so it's the Star Wars Card Trader app. It has them all, as well as fantastic images from The Force Awakens, The Clone Wars, Rebels, and much more.
Absolutely. You've got your favorite characters, memorable scenes, you've got key moments. It's all there. You get credits every day for free from the app, which is available from iTunes or Google Play. Open packs from the cantina, trade with your friends, and enjoy these amazing Star Wars memories as you take your first step into a larger world.
There's so many different sets to choose from also, and there's so many great cards to chase. There's special inserts, there's rewards for completing sets and variants. It's everything you love in collecting from a galaxy far, far away.
The Star Wars Digital Card Trader collecting app from Topps.
These are the cards you're looking for.
So we're off to hyperspace, and we've got this deal that we've got to arrange. We've got these power cells that Ezra wants. And we finally meet the buyer, and it's Ez Morgan, who we know from the Lando Calrissian episode, Idiot's Array. Hondo is a very interesting character because of the way that everyone is bargaining. As you both mentioned, Ezra was very calm in the face of adversity. And then Hondo likes the fact that Ezra lied to him. He truly does. It's not a fib. He's not hurt or wounded in any way, shape, or form. Let's talk here about the psychology of piracy and being a pirate. Joe, what about this particular ideology of Hondo? You mentioned earlier, I'm just so intrigued that you're not a huge fan of his. When he says to Ezra, you know, he likes the fact that Ezra lies, what does that say about him?
It just shows that he thinks Ezra's a good partner, potential partner.
Right. And do you think this is a challenging thing for children to watch if it's supposed to be good that the hero is a liar? Well, honestly, I think it's sort of a trick question because I think, again, it sort of ties back to, you know, Ezra's not doing it to be deceitful. He's doing it for survival. But this whole pirate code and the psychology of being a pirate, James, is pretty fascinating.
Oh, absolutely. Again, it's something that we're following the rebellion. We're all excited for, what is it, 39 days from now? Because we want to see good triumph, and not just good that's wishy-washy and gray. We want to see good triumph over evil. And there's a whole spectrum of behaviors in between. And I think people tend to see themselves as better than they may actually really be behaving. And Hondo represents that. And it's really not pleasurable, but relieving to see people behaving in that way. As for the piracy, I think one of the greatest lines is, so do you want to be a Jedi pirate, a pirate Jedi?
Yes.
Oh, that's so great. And that gets to the crux of it. I think that's almost one of the points where the whole episode turns. The galaxy was a terrible place before. It was a hard place to make a living. You know, even Django was just trying to make his way. Like, that was a terrible accent, right? That sounded so New Zealand, didn't it?
Right.
And he has to make it any way he can. And yeah, here's a guy who used to walk around with a whole bunch of buddies, and they always had a nice hideout. And now he's walking alone, clutching that whatever that case of credits is, all alone, walking off not into a sunset, but into a hangar bay with, you know, really no way to get back off that planet. If you think about it, he's still going to be stuck there.
Right.
So he'll buy a ship. So when it comes to the kids, yeah, how about that? I was a pirate, I think, 3 or 4 straight years when I was a kid, in between being Darth Vader and Betsy Ross, but I'll have to blame my aunt for that one. I'm from Philly. It's what we do. And, why do the kids emulate pirates so much? You know, it's fun. Everybody likes to be on the sea, that Duracell commercial, right? That's really what we think piracy is. Bunch of kids playing out in the yard, smacking sticks together, when they were real, you know, scoundrels that lived in our real world. We do have to be careful with what we show them. But, you know, think of the Voltron we used to watch, or G.I. Joe. And remember, Cobra hit his G.I. Joe as the Stormtroopers did. And there's a different morality now in our current society. So we can't be afraid to show kids what really happened. But we definitely have to speak to them about it. You probably hear these every day in school, asking those moral questions.
Absolutely. It's one of the things that's so interesting is Tom Sawyer. Let's talk about Tom Sawyer, published in 1876. Mark Twain, of course. Tom Sawyer, his escape is to be a pirate. That's one of the things that he does. It's one of the things that Huckleberry Finn wants to do, too. And it's interesting because I think, like you said, kids want to pretend. They want things to be real. But they also want to pretend and escape. It's an easier way to sort of process how crazy this world can be. And Hondo, for all of his foibles, he clearly is looking out for Ezra. Like, he doesn't necessarily go out of his way to save Ezra, but he doesn't ever have to. He doesn't ever put in that position. And let's talk about the escape with this incredible scene where Chopper comes flying in, literally with guns ablazing. We hear the detention cell music from A New Hope. A lot of interesting things happening in this little escape scene, which is sort of like a mini climax before the main climax at the end of the show. What about this little escape and as Morgan running off? What about this part stood out for all of you guys? Joe, what about you?
Chopper.
Yeah, tell me why.
I just love Chopper.
He was hilarious, wasn't he? Which part about Chopper surprised you the most?
That he can actually handle the guns?
Yeah, and fire them. That, he's not necessarily accurate. He's not any more accurate than he is when Ezra's shooting at him when he's got the stormtrooper on there. But he was a lot of fun. The one thing that, besides the thrill of this, and Ezra showing some very serious Jedi prowess and some moves we haven't really seen from him so far that were really stunning. I mean, his training has come a long way, as has his Force abilities. But I was interested in the one scene, of course, and I feel like I talk about this a lot in Rebels Reactions, is the one thug early on in this little scene that's sent to his death, and it's literally done in a whimsical fashion. It's almost like the old Goofy cartoons where he goes flying off of the side of a mountain or out a window, and he kind of does that yell. That thug flies out there, and it's played for comedic effect, but that guy's suffocating in space.
Yep. My 10-year-old, you know, I hope he doesn't hear that. My 10-year-old pointed that out. Daddy, that guy's going to suffocate.
Really?
Yeah, he really noticed that.
And did it seem to bother him, or is it just kind of like, oh, boy?
You know, at first it was like, the bad guy got it. And then there was a humanity that settled in there.
And isn't that refreshing, too? I think that's one of the smart things that they're doing on this show is, and obviously, you know, this is something that you want to take too seriously, because it is a fun story, but I think there are some real things there. So it's interesting that your son caught on to that.
And you know, the way those henchmen were articulated, I didn't think they were droids. I just thought they were guys with full masks on.
Yes.
You know, they little better than those Macquarie IG-88s. And then Ezra shines there though, because it sets up the tension of, all right, this happened to this faceless guy that we don't know his name, you know, just, you know, a character in the background. And then here's a guy we've come to, well, at least appreciate being on our screens for the previous 15 minutes. He's on that same sled heading out, and I saw that coming from a mile away.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, those things are going that direction. That guy's on the floor. I wonder where this is going to go. So you know the peril that that Hondo's in. Great two lines right there, right? What's the pirate's number one goal? I'm rich. And I'm dead.
That's right. And it's in that order, too. That was what his concern was.
That's about when it happens.
I think it's interesting, too, that when we've seen this episode, and I guess it really hit me here on this one more than the others, is that Ezra is much more adept at saving lives than he is at causing harm or inflicting damage through the Force. And I think that's very powerful. And that also shows how he is so much more of how the Jedi wish they could have been than what they ended up becoming in the Clone Wars, don't they, Joe?
Yeah.
He's just very skilled. He's very skilled at helping others, which makes him someone for kids not only to look up to, but the promise that Ezra Bridger has, James, is really staggering.
Yeah, first of all, what you just said there, Ezra likes to help people. He never works to harm anybody else. We've heard another kid described that way, haven't we?
Absolutely.
That was Shmi talking about Anakin way long before that.
That's right.
I thought of that. But going back to his compassion and wanting to help people, take a step back to that crazy shootout that Chopper gets into. He didn't have to be on one wheel. That was him just having a good time.
That's true.
Watch his guns. They're both splayed out, you know, 10, 20 degrees to the right and left. He's missing as Morgan on purpose, I think. Right? Because he doesn't have a reason to kill anybody. It reminded me of like the Terminator in Terminator 2, you know, don't kill anybody. So he just shoots him in the knee and stuff. Nobody gets, you know. So I think that's what Chopper was trying to do, scare off this guy so that he could protect his friends.
Although we've seen from Chopper, he's not afraid. I mean, he knocked a droid out of a ship at the end of season one because he was jealous. So
yeah.
It's hard to say if it was on purpose or not. That's an interesting, fascinating perspective I hadn't thought of.
He's the cat, not the dog, right? He doesn't want other people in his... so then Ezra, you look at the expression they put on his face. When they were back collecting those medical supplies back in the first season, you know, he's struggling, but he gets really angry and he pulls up that beast from way below. But there's anguish on his face. He's got his eyes closed. It's more about getting the hands in the right position to call up the magic of the Force and whatever. But here, he's looking Hondo in the face, clenching his teeth and using his power to, you know, his energy, all that is within him, to pull back another person. Not just to make a thing happen, but to care for that person.
That's right.
And that spoke tons to me of the growth that he's had in his Jedi training.
Yes, he's always been a very selfless person, but now he's exerting this. He's just showing so much charisma. It's hard to imagine that Ezra doesn't make it through Return of the Jedi, and of course I have no idea, and who knows what's going to happen with him. But he's such an interesting character, which is why it's nice that they're focusing on him. And of course, we're very ready for Hera and Sabine centered episodes. Yeah. But there's a lot going on there. Before we move on from this particular scene, I thought it was kind of fun that Hondo says, one of my best friends was a Jedi. At least I thought we were friends. And he says it in his very Hondo way, doesn't he, Joe?
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's safe to say he was probably talking about Obi-Wan Kenobi, wouldn't you?
That's who I think.
Yeah. Do you think that he and Obi-Wan were friends?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think in a way. I think that's probably a good way to look at it. I think that there is, I don't know if there's respect. I think there is a different kind of respect. Obi-Wan Kenobi, and we've seen time and again, he's smart, but he's also street smart. And he knows how to relate to people. He understands the psychology of people. And I don't ever recall him trying to take Hondo down in a way that he wouldn't give up, because Hondo has his place in the universe, doesn't he, James?
Oh, yeah. There was some sort of professional respect between them, I guess, to a degree.
Yes.
Yeah.
They needed each other from time to time. And there was no way of eradicating everybody. You know, you look at, I think what my wife always watches, Law and Order, and the cops always have their informants. And you know they're up to something low level. You know, they're only stealing a few generators. They're not destroying whole planets or something.
Right.
So you keep them on the payroll, or at least within good graces. You know, I don't think that anybody has an entire Facebook friends list of people who are all upstanding citizens.
It's true. Yeah.
And since we all want to pretend that we're as good and regal as somebody like Princess Leia, maybe we all need a little scoundrel somewhere to humble us from time to time.
That's right. It's much more real and authentic a portrayal of the psyche of the human spirit. And then we end up seeing that Visago is back on the ship. We were told earlier that he lost the broken horn. He didn't lose it. He's still very much on it, but it was part of the Hondo machinations, if you will. And Ezra saves Visago, and there's a lot of betrayals back and forth, droids turning on and off, and people firing at one another. But Ezra and Visago are square. There's a lot we can talk about here, so feel free to jump into anything that you find interesting, gentlemen. James, we'll start with you, and then we'll close with Joe. James, what about this whole thing with Visago up to the point where Ezra is squared?
Yeah, so I think that whenever we in the real life offer a favor, it's always with the hope in the back of our minds, sometimes in the front of our minds, that we're never going to have to repay it to the level of the favor somebody has given us. Reminds me of like Wimpy from Popeye, you know, do something for me today and I'll give you something of much less value later, but you think this is valuable now. Ezra gets away with that. He had incredible information that saved an entire life. And here Ezra didn't have to do too much except give the guy back what was already his. You know, Visago calls in his favor to get back what he only had a couple days or whatever before that anyway. Ezra gets off real light.
I agree with you. In fact, I almost found it at the end of season one when this happened and Ezra owed Visago. I was really concerned that Ezra was going to leave the crew of the Ghost or he was going to be wrapped up in all this gangster type stuff. Mm-hmm. And it bothered me. And then when he got off free while I was living the episode, it didn't bother me in the least because I just thought, okay, it makes sense in the context of what's going on here. But after the fact, I thought, man, Ezra is really fortunate because that could have gone really, really bad. Joe, what were your thoughts on all that?
I think just Visago was just like cashing in the favor that he was owed, trying to get his ship back. I was a little concerned for Ezra too, as far as what he was going to do.
Right, because you. Go ahead.
I say we know he's not going to leave. We knew he wasn't going to leave the Ghost, because that was just kind of a that would just end the series right there.
Right. Yeah, that would be somewhat of a surprise. I just bought a new Ezra action figure. I don't want him to leave the show.
Ghosty Ezra.
Yeah, he's square with Visago, and he does it in a way without having to sacrifice any part of himself, which I think separates him very much from Anakin. When he now, obviously, this wasn't as big as life and death of saving your spouse, but yeah. The fact is, he doesn't have to compromise his actual principles to be who he is, and I think that's great. So Hondo gets away, or so we think, but he really doesn't, because the chopper had the Phantom on autopilot. Everybody returns to the Ghost. When the episode ends, Hondo turns back to Ezra and he says, "You truly are a Jedi." What did he mean by that, guys?
I think that's what I was getting at in the beginning. I think that's the whole arc. That was the point of it, because the episode begins with that same question. I don't even know. Are you a rebel or are you a Jedi? You missed both of are you a soldier or a Jedi? You missed both of your trainings. He goes, "I don't know if I want to be either." He didn't say he didn't want to be either. He just wasn't sure which one to pick. How, I mean, you know, all things being equal, how do you pick either? But through his actions, through what was really deep down in his heart, he did Jedi things, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Saved a pirate.
And he did it in style, didn't he, Joe?
Yep.
So what do you think Hondo meant when he says, "You're truly a Jedi"?
Stuck to his principles and still made out on top.
I agree with that. And also the fact that he mentioned earlier that one of his best friends was a Jedi. We know it was Obi-Wan Kenobi. And he sees a little bit of Obi-Wan Kenobi in Ezra, because they both are charming and charismatic. They both are not above stretching the truth to for a greater good. But they still have this way of looking at the life that's not so cut and dry. Yeah. It's something that Hondo respects. He finds refreshing. And it also shows that Ezra is more than just the traditional Jedi. There's something special about Ezra Bridger that even Yoda notices back from season one. So it's going to be so fun, as always, to see his continual evolution into the Jedi that we believe he will become. So, gentlemen, before we give our final grades, any last-minute thoughts or reflections on anything for Brothers of the Broken Horn? Joe, let's start with you.
I like that. Ezra's goal, once he arrived on the ship, was to get the power generators for that other planet, which is what they were going to do, what the rest of the crew went off to go do, to try and get on the black market.
Right.
Ultimately, Ezra saves the day in more ways than one.
Good point. Good point. James, what about you? Any last-minute thoughts or reflections on Brothers of the Broken Horn?
Yeah, a lot of the writing I do in my the rest of my professional endeavors, I deal with the word humble and humility a lot. And I think sometimes we think, and I'm getting somewhere, believe me.
We do.
I have to say that in my sermons too. Just bear with me for 27 minutes. I'll get to my So humility is not saying I'm scum. Remember Wayne and Garth bowing before Alice Cooper? We're scum. We're not worthy. We're not. No, it's. That's not what humility is.
Humility is
who you really are, not going above your pay grade or operating with less than the gifts that you've been giving, knowing exactly who you are. And that's the struggle. Well, you know, we've all been through our teen years. Who am I? That's the big question, right? And that's what Ezra is answering. When he went up in the Phantom, he had no idea he was going to get power generators out of this deal. He's right. Like, that's... I got the keys and they went to the grocery store. I'm out of here for a few minutes. And he discovers a little bit more about who he really is. And that's how this fits into the overall story, instead of just being a one-off story that you could just delete from the catalog. So I might have a conditional grade in a minute, but it has a place in the story if they build on those things.
Right. And I think that they will. And I like how you both explain that. Ezra, things fall in his lap in a very positive way, and he's always true to who he is, and he has a very refreshing way of taking on these responsibilities and not being overwhelmed by them, but using them to grow and to change. And the fact that he continually gets the admiration of all these adults who may or may not know better, and he does it with a poise that I find really endearing, and it's one of the reasons Taylor Gray, of course, does a great job of voicing him. But this was a really strong episode, and it could have easily been a throwaway episode, because sometimes these one-offs can do that in other shows. Rebels really hasn't done that, I don't think. But it actually ended up being really strong. So, guys, here we go. It's time for our final grade. James, we'll start with you. Final grade for Brothers of the Broken Horn.
That's not fair. I already told you I was hemming between two different things and gave a reason. I was going to go third so that I could piggyback off of whatever was popular
between. Well, let's do that.
Don't worry about it. B plus to A. If it continues on that trajectory, and I sure hope it does. And, you know, with the creative team behind all of these cartoons, they've never just left, and they've left stories out there to come to the end on their own. But this is definitely on the path. So it'll be an A when I finally write my book.
All right, well, there you go. So if you had to do it right now, if this was the only show you ever saw, would it still be an A or would it be a B+?
I think it would be a B+ then.
Okay, yeah. I'm going to put that in the ledger since final grades are due. I'm going to give it. I'll have Joe go last. I'll probably give it an A-, and I'm a bit surprised that I'm grading it as high as I am. I actually enjoyed this one more than I have some of season two. Season two's been a bit more hit and miss than I expected. Based on what Freddie told us, it sounds like season two is going to be incredible. Once it's all said and done, this was something that could have been a throwaway episode, but it was not. And Ezra is just so interesting to me. I love Hondo. I love that with age he has softened a little bit while still being very much Hondo and Naka. But I'm not going to say that he's empathetic, because I don't think that he is. But the fact that the way his interactions with Ezra, and the fact that he does respect him, and he doesn't try to swindle or cheat Ezra, which he did to Obi-Wan quite often, shows me that there is, in fact, evidence that war does change people, good and bad, and many different reasons, which is very compelling. So I'm going to give it an A-. Joe, what about you?
I'm going to give it a B+.
Tell me why.
The story. What?
Tell me why.
The story, the way that, like I said, the way that Ezra ultimately turns out to be a hero, and also finding out what he really wants to do.
Right, and who he wants to be too. And Joe, speaking of who he wants to be, you've been absent from Coffee with Kenobi for a while. You've had a lot of very powerful challenges in your life, but you were doing amazing. Would you like to give the listeners an update and how things are going for you and what's been going on?
Well, just to give the listeners an idea of what happened, in February I had a serious brain bleed and a serious stroke that required emergency brain surgery that left me on my left side paralyzed for a long time. Right now, my left side is starting to come back in various different forms. My leg's getting stronger. Starting to walk with a walker. Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Yeah, doing better. And you're back on Rebels Reactions with a high level of analysis and quality. And we are just so happy not only to have you on the show, but on a personal level. I've known you for a long time, and it's just so great to be able to talk to you again and to hear your voice and to see how you're progressing. And I'm so proud of you, and we're going to keep on praying for you and keep on keeping on, my friend, because you are an inspiration to all of us.
Absolutely.
Thank you. I will.
It's true. It's true. And Jill, we'd love to have you still stick around, because we've got to ask James his 5 questions, don't we?
Yes, we do.
That's right. Okay, James, this is it, my friend. As you know, we have our 5 questions we ask each guest. Joe already did these when he looked at Breaking Ranks with us last year for Rebels Reactions. But you are up, and we're going to start with, what is your favorite Star Wars movie?
Oh, my favorite movie. So I was thinking about this. It's cliche to say Empire Strikes Back. And then it's become cliche to say it's cliche to say it's Empire Strikes Back. Right? I hear that on all the podcasts. But I still think that's the best one. That's always been my favorite. Those dark downturns always are filmed, always become an integral part of the story, because there's the inherent promise of the light, of the triumph, and there's the most meat in there. So that's it. Always has been.
Who's your favorite character, James?
Oh, that's always been an easy one for my life, and I think that has to do a lot with when I was born. It's Luke. I think it's all, for me, it's always been Luke's journey, which is what we were told when the first novelization came out in 76, but that, you know, things change. And then the way he, you see him very deliberately, you watch all three of the original trilogy movies, the way you see him mature, snotty farm brat to, you know, brash student who knows it all, to that guy who shows up in Jabba's palace with poise. It's always been sort of a model for the kind of child I was, the teenager I was, and the man I hope to be. And then, you know, just family dynamics, you know, could you, that stuff being thrown at you. None of us, well, maybe somebody does, not me at least, didn't grow up in a Beaver Cleaver household, although we wanted to believe we did. There's always something, but that's okay. We learn how to deal with it. And Luke's compassion for his father, irregardless, that is a word, by the way, it's in the dictionary, I saw it once, regardless of who his father was, he was going to love him, take care of him, do whatever he could for him, whether he was just his dad who was around all the time or the guy that became it. It's quite a moving example for me. And a lot of words to say there.
Well, that's all right. It's well said, and I don't think too many could find fault with that. Our next question is, what is your favorite line of dialogue or film moment?
My favorite moment, and I remember pausing my TV on it for a while and just watching, is it goes back to my love for Luke and that story. Luke with Vader on the platform right before they take off from Death Star 2. A lot of my thinking about the human person, and that's overly general, but I deal with that a lot, is about the masks that we wear. A lot of people that I meet professionally, you know, when I deal with them pastorally or just in whatever situation, everybody has a mask on. But if you sit down and just through presence, eventually that mask comes off and you find out who people really are. And that is where they become beautiful. Anakin, when you take off that mask, I mean, he looks like a beaten up turnip. I don't know what's going on with the top of his head. Like it's been sewn together or something. And at that moment, he's the most beautiful man in the galaxy for his son. And the way he sits there and just holds this bulk of a cyborg, you know, Luke's a diminutive person compared to his father. And there's even the moment when he's dragging him to that landing strut where Luke's pulling on him, but it almost feels like it's shot differently than the rest of the movie. The camera's moving. It's a little unsteady cam, which didn't happen too much then. And there's real struggle on, I don't know if it's Luke's face or Mark Hamill's face, to try to pull this guy. But it was so desperate. It mattered so much to him. And I think that's the climax. You know, the Emperor's almost just like a sprinkle or a jimmy, as we say in Philadelphia, on top of the ice cream. But that's the real treat, is seeing the reconnection of the father and the son.
Beautiful point.
James, if you collect, what is your favorite collectible?
Time Machines. Had the hot plate. I have a regular playset, and I'm looking wistfully off into the distance right now, remembering them sitting on top of me all the way through my childhood, up until I went to college and they went into a box. And then when I got married, I had children. I shared the playset with them. They took the toys into their rooms and shattered them. Now they're in the bottom of all their toy boxes. So that's a collectible I don't really have anymore. About when, well, it was right before Dark Horse lost their, or gave up the license, whatever is a nice way to say that. I started collecting that last Star Wars series they gave, and pretty steadily collecting this. Followed them. I get to the comic shop and I talk very nicely to my comic purveyor. Then I go to my car and I read them right there before you can take them out of the parking lot. Those comics are just beautiful. It's almost like it's too much of a treat to spend so little money to get such beautiful art every week.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
That's my favorite right now.
Very cool. Well, James, last one. What particular messages or themes about the Star Wars saga resonate or speak to you?
Well, for me, it's all about the redemption. Even was before I was in before I was clergy, that we can go from one place and move into higher forms of maturity, moving into from childhood to adulthood. Just recently, over the past couple of years, getting involved with the writing and the larger fandom, seeing how the hero's journey. I haven't studied. Man, it's so much on my book list of what I really like to get into, and how that affects every one of our lives, even if we take low level jobs or whatever. And I don't mean that in a diminutive way. All the way up to, you know, folks, CEOs, we're all on some sort of journey. We got to have those mentors, whatever talisman that is in our life, you know, that propels us on to the higher calling. It really centers around that, and that's the thing that most can enlighten everybody, no matter what your walk, no matter what your faith, no matter what your philosophical outlook is. That's just key to understanding what it means to be a human being.
Right. Very, very true. Wow. Well, great, great job. It's like you've been preparing for this for a long time. You did an awesome job. You both did, of course. So, gentlemen, before we let you go, where can listeners find each of you if they want to ask you a question or just say hello? James, let's start with you.
Yeah. So I have the immense pleasure to be publishing on Coffee with Kelby on the 22nd of the month, or the 23rd. I always forget and have to look it up. I think it's the 2nd. and then that stuff is also cross-posted. I write some things occasionally on my own personal blog. It's the URL is theforceandfaith.blogspot.com. I'm on Twitter. I have a really convoluted handle that I've been using for years. It's Adelpho Theos, A-D-E-L-P-H-O-T-H-E-O-S. That never works when I'm trying to call customer service. Yeah, and I'm on Facebook too. You can find me at Priest James Worthington. Always loving to talk about whatever, especially Star Wars or, you know, faith journeys and how they interact with each other.
Absolutely, and you have a very unique expertise in the area. So we really appreciate your talents, and so happy that you came into the Coffee with Kenobi family, because our site is better for it, and as is our site much better, and everything about Star Wars better for having Joe as a part of it, and Joe's writings and Joe's passion and his love of R2-D2. If listeners right now could see Joe's photo for Skype, it's awesome, because he's got the R2-D2 Mouseketeer ears and it's just got that awesome smile. So, Joe, where can people reach out to you if they want to ask you a question or just say hello?
I'm on Facebook under Joe Taylor. Twitter is Joe2D2 underscore Joe.
That's right.
So awesome.
It is awesome, and Joe's blogs can be found every month on Coffee with Kenobi as well. And gentlemen, we'll have links to all of your stuff on our show notes. Thank you both again for coming back to Coffee with Kenobi and Rebels Reactions. We look forward to having you both on again in the near future, and have a wonderful evening, guys.
Thank you.
You too, Dan.
From Topps comes the all-new digital card collecting app, free to download from iTunes or Google Play, Star Wars Card Trader.
For the first time ever, collect and trade everything from legendary 1977 Star Wars cards to new cards featuring exclusive content from Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens.
All from the comfort of your mobile devices, Star Wars Card Trader.
These are the cards you're looking for.
Well, kid, you pulled it off.
Was there ever any doubt?
Yes.
Chopper, get us out of here!
If you would like to respond to our question of the show, have a comment, or just want to say hello, send us an email or MP3 at feedback@coffeewithkenobi.com. Or if you have a specific question or comment for either of us individually, email us at danz@coffeewithkenobi.com or coreyc@coffeewithkenobi.com, or visit us at coffeewithkenobi.com and click on the Contact Us section or comment on one of the stories featured on the site. If you enjoy the show, please write a review in iTunes or Stitcher. You can also like the show on Facebook at facebook.com/coffeewithkenobi, as well as keep up to date at our Twitter feed at Coffee with Kenobi. You can also find us on Tumblr at coffeewithkenobi.tumblr.com. If you enjoy the jazz music, the album is Eye to Eye by Steve Torak.
This is Spectre One,
I need a lift.
This podcast is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or Lucasfilm Limited. It is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names, sounds, and any other Star Wars related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Disney and their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Coffee with Kenobi unless otherwise indicated.
This is the podcast you're looking for.